Old Gods of Appalachia is a horror anthology podcast, and therefore may contain material not suitable for all audiences. So listener discretion is advised. Old Gods of Appalachia presents Strangers, a short story by Steve Shell, edited by Cam Collins. Mineral City, Virginia, 1981. The road that wound down from US 58 into the sleepy town of Mineral City was dangerous at night. A series of serpentine switchbacks at ever-increasing incline that seemed forever shrouded in a nighttime fog. Little Stone Road had claimed more than its share of careless motorists in the decades since its dense, tarry surface had first been paved. There was a Barrett's Quick Shop, open late with all the soft drinks, snacks, and cheap beer anybody could ever need at the top of the Twining Road, and a camper park known for late-night rowdiness at the bottom, with nothing but black top and yellow lines in between. The combination of these two endpoints should have been enough to explain how the occasional drunk driver had met their end on this windy little back road over the past 30 years, but a closer look at the statistics showed that it was not merely a handful. Nor was it just ever now and again. Since 1968, every 2 years, the crooked road that stretched between the highway and the home of the six-time single-A football state champions had taken the lives of two young people before graduation and two older people before Thanksgiving. Sometimes two at a time, other times there'd be four separate heaps of twisted metal and broken bodies. The combinations varied, but the total cost was always the same. The seasonal deaths were almost exclusively local folks, the occasional out-of-town visitor, unfamiliar with how to drive properly on the back roads of southwestern Virginia, would misjudge a turn or lose visibility in the fog that could creep in suddenly and wrap their vehicle around a tree, but those were usually just a bonus. Thus, the side of the road along Little Stone was pockmarked with makeshift monuments and flowers refreshed annually on the anniversaries of accidents. Depending on the time of year, you could be forgiven for thinking you were driving through a cemetery. Everybody knew that road was dangerous, but nobody talked about it. Nobody could say why. The strangest thing was almost none of the accidents that stole the lives of the young and old from that edge of Esau County had been witnessed. Due to the fact that Little Stone ran along the narrow ridge from the highway to town, there weren't many houses or businesses close to the road once you turned off of US 58. It was a veritable no man's land of weeds and woods on either side of the two narrow lanes that climbed the side of East Stone Mountain like kudzu vines. Without anyone around to say otherwise, most of these accidents were attributed to driving while intoxicated, even if there was no booze found on the victims. If they weren't drunk, it was likely a drunk had caused the accident and fled the scene. Wouldn't be the first time somebody passed the legal limit, ran another car off the road, and walked away without a scratch. Hell, around these parts, it was downright routine. Travis Stidham could have told you there hadn't been another vehicle, despite being likely concussed and visibly bleeding from a nasty cut just above his left eyebrow, sitting within the ruined confines of his 1977 VW Rabbit. Travis could have told you exactly what happened. He'd just gotten off work at the bottling plant over toward Prince's Flat. There were two such facilities on either end of Prince's Flat, one for each of the two soda pop giants that had been pumping sugar and fizzy water through this part of Appalachia for over 50 years. Travis worked for the one that would like to teach the world to sing, and had just come off a 9-hour shift on the loading dock running a forklift. He was plumb whooped and done for the night. He'd turned down beers with Rusty and Daryl and just wanted to get down the mountain to his mobile home at Kelly's trailer park behind the camper lot. All he wanted was a hot shower, Salisbury steak TV dinner, and a little bit of late night television before his brain shut down out of sheer exhaustion. He might have been worn out. But Travis was a careful driver and prided himself on having nary a speeding ticket or accident in all his dozen years behind the wheel. And he had rounded the third bend of Littlestone, where there were still wreaths placed every year for Donnie Meade and Bradley Hood, both of whom were taken by the mountain a week before their graduation back in 79. And the biggest tree right behind the guardrail had been adorned with a weathered wooden cross draped in a soiled satin banner hanging road-stained and worn from one of its arms. The word Papaw and a faded set of dates peeked out at drivers as it hung limply from that old rugged cross. Travis had always been creeped out by that one. It'd been there for years, that stained and tattered banner flapping in the wind, but never letting go. He had just passed the Papaw tree, as they called it, and started into the next turn when there they were. Two dumbasses stumbling on the side of the road. The one bringing up the rear tripped over something, and in the blink of an eye had tumbled onto the blacktop. Travis slammed on his brakes, but it was too late. He heard the man's body slam into the front corner of his bumper as he tried to swerve away, but overcorrected. The rabbit seemed to lose all hold on the road, spinning wildly until it slammed head-on into the guardrail. Travis's head rebounded like a basketball off the steering wheel, and for a moment, the man, the road, and the whole damn world just went away. In the hazy wasteland that lay between Route 58 and the edge of Mineral City proper, Travis Stidham's headlights stabbed back up the mountain into the fog like twin lighthouses calling a ship to shore. The body of the man Travis had hit lay face down across the yellow line, and as Travis slowly regained his senses, he saw the man begin to move. Twitches and shivers racked the man's body as if an electrical current pulsed through him. Travis opened the driver's side door and stepped shakily onto the road.
Hey, buddy, don't try to move now. You've been dumbly hit by a car. Don't move, you might make it worse.
Travis called as he stepped closer to the man on the ground who seemed to be having some sort of seizure. Travis's mama had always warned him about the people you saw walking on the side of the road. Travelers, folks without proper places to lay their heads, or those who had to hoof it because the state decided they were no longer safe to operate motor vehicles. But 9 out of 10 times, those folks were strangers, especially in a town as small as Mineral City. Travis didn't recognize this damn fool who'd wandered out into his path, but to be fair, he also couldn't see the man's face as it was turned away from him. His body continued to violently twitch and contort as Travis grew closer.
Buddy? Hey, buddy, can you hear me? It's gonna be all...
He swallowed the words as the man's head turned towards him. Travis Stidham could see plainly now that he had no face, no eyes, no nose, nothing that would resemble a proper mouth. Where the man's face should have been was a lumpy mass of skin and tissue that reminded Travis of pictures of the human brain he had seen in biology class back in high school, or the pickled pig's brain his great papaw used to cook into scrambled eggs when Travis was little. Ugh. Travis never would forget Papaw Stidham cracking open that can to reveal its gory insides, waving it at Travis and his little brother while groaning, "Brains," like that old black and white zombie movie. Had he hit the man so hard it flipped his brain down over his face? Did human heads even work like that? The faceless man made his way on to all fours, the joints of his elbows and knees cracking as they bent the right way and then the wrong, and he pulled himself to his feet, turning his knot of face towards Travis and raising a hand to point at him accusingly.
Hey, man, go easy now. You walked out in front of my car and...
Blood began to wash over the lumpy tissue where the man's face should be, and a low and mournful moan issued from somewhere. Though Travis could see no mouth from whence such a sound would usually come, the air around them grew colder, and the fog seemed to grow denser and wetter. The man took a lurching step towards him, that low moan growling louder in Travis's ears. He wanted to run, but his feet were unsteady. He hit his head.
Maybe that was it. Maybe this whole thing was just some sort of nightmare or hallucination or something brought about by him kissing the steering wheel when them two idiots stumbled out in the road. Wait. Travis thought suddenly. There had been two of them. Hadn't there? Hey, kid, rasped a voice from behind him. Travis turned, expecting to see another of the raw meat faces stumbling from the fog, but instead found himself face to face with the ugliest man he'd seen in a long time. His skin was leathery, with a crooked mustache that thinned to a whisper on one side of the man's lopsided mouth. His hair was long in the back and peeked out of an old leather newsboy cap. The smell coming off of him was gut-twisting. Oh, Travis had worked an awful season butchering hogs with his Uncle Jimmy when he was a teenager, and this man smelled like his laundry hamper after a full week of that grim work. Before Travis could respond, the filthy man grabbed him by the back of the neck and slung him off the road into the weeds. Get down! It can't find you if you're not on the road, the newcomer grated as he threw himself down beside Travis. The two of them peered out at the thing that walked on two legs like a man, but most definitely was not human. They watched as it sniffed all around the wreck of the rabbit, leaning into the open driver's side door and rubbing its bleeding head where Travis's blood had smeared on the steering wheel. Travis thought it looked like it was trying to scent him. The way his papaw's blue ticks would get a nose full of whatever small prey they'd been sent after. The man in the dirty clothes grabbed him by the collar. If it comes for you, there ain't much I can do but kill you quick to spare you the misery. Nobody don't deserve what them things can do to you. What is it? Travis whispered, properly terrified now. Well, he's taking to call them strangers, the man answered, never taking his eyes off the thing pacing around the busted remains of the Volkswagen. They ain't like us, and they ain't like y'all. Couldn't tell you where they come from, but they turn up in places like this road or out between Thacker's Branch and Needmore. Hidden places where nobody can't see them till it's too late. All these car wrecks that happen out here, I'd be willing to bet half a paycheck or a case of Beanie Weenies are the ones causing them. And at the funeral's closed casket, I'd bet hard money it was them. But there wouldn't be nobody to put in that box. The thing in the road gave a low, grumbling groan and began trekking back up the mountain. The fog thinned. The temperature climbed back up to its rightful place, and the foul-smelling old man finally let Travis up, releasing the back of his neck, and they both stood. When Travis glanced over at the man and saw him better, his heart gave a lurch. Unlike the creature Travis had hit, he could see that the old man had a face, aged and lopsided, but after tussling about in the weeds and wrestling Travis to the ground, it was now clear that it was a mask. A grisly mask made from a dead man's face strapped over bloody, raw muscle. This feller was not like the thing on the side of the road, no, but he was still not right. He could see the man's clothes better now, and they were old-timey and far out of fashion, and on his belt hung an enormous skinning knife. They follow me when I go out at night sometimes, he told Travis wistfully. I guess I still smell alive enough for them to mistake me for one of yens. They never make a move on me. I guess they just tag along hoping for leftovers. The parchment of his skin crinkled into a wicked grin as he drew his knife, and he was nose to nose with Travis in half a breath. The point of that skinning knife moved about Travis's face like an artist's brush sketching out an idea before really laying on the paint. Let's see here. Oh my. You busted up your eyebrow something fierce. That'll need stitches. You're going to have a hell of a bruise right here on your jaw and... Well, shit. Boy, your lips are busted all to hell. No, you're no good to me at all. What am I supposed to do? Put on a brand new face? Looks like it went 10 rounds with Joe Lewis? No, thank you, young sir. I have standards. I guess that makes this your lucky day. The ugly man sighed as he slid his knife back into its sheath, beginning to turn away. You probably got a concussion. You'll want to get that checked out. Travis Stidham was on the verge of pissing his pants when the red and blue lights of a Mineral City police cruiser lit up the dwindling fog.
He turned to wave for help at whatever town cop was on patrol, pointing toward the man with the knife to let who was ever in that cruiser know that there was an armed assailant right here, but when he glanced back, he found himself alone. Old Skint Tom had disappeared into the darkening woods around Little Stone Road, leaving the boy to explain this little incident to Mineral City's finest all on his own. Travis gave up trying to understand any of it. Instead, he turned and began to walk toward the oncoming police car with his head pounding and his hands raised. This has been a special presentation of Strangers, a short story written by Steve Shell and edited by Cam Collins. Our intro and outro music is by Brother Landon Blood, exclusively for our family here on Patreon.